Yes, our next speaker is going to take on the subject of the National Police. He's going to expose the secret plan the federal government has that has not been revealed to you. The name of our next speaker is Officer Jack McLam from Phoenix, Arizona. He's a former police officer for the city of Phoenix, Arizona, highly decorated, the publisher of the Aid and Abet newsletter. And he's also going to talk a little bit about the difference between the privilege in driving and the fact that we have a right to travel. So please give Jack Glam a warm welcome right now.
Thank you very much. Dallas, Texas. First time I've been here, if you can believe that. I'm very pleased that I can come to a place that's so cool as Dallas, Texas. We've, of course, had our problems with the weather in Phoenix for the last few weeks, and I've been there about 15 years and finally saw my first day at 122 degrees just a few days ago. And I thought I'd never see that. And so it's a real pleasure to be in a nice, cool place today. And I really appreciate the invitation for you folks. And I like the fact that I was able to spend the day here with you and meet some of you and talk about some of the things that's going on here in your area. And I'm very, very excited about some of the things you're doing. It sounds like that you're going to find very shortly that some of the things you're involved in here may have national implications when I'm talking to some of the people that are active in this area of Dallas, Texas. So keep up the good work. I'm just thrilled to death. I'm blessed in a way to be able to do a little traveling. I don't do too much because we're too busy with the newsletter. But I occasionally get to come out and speak for groups, and it's always exciting to see what's going on across America. And you're to be praised very highly for keeping up the good fight. And it is appreciated by those of us in Phoenix, too, because we learn from you, and we share that information with others, and you learn from other people. And so it's a real healthy thing, and I think a very positive thing happening in America today. We hear so much negative. And so today I'm going to tell you about some things that are going on in law enforcement and in the criminal justice system. I want to keep it on an upbeat because there's a lot to be pleased with going on in law enforcement today, believe it or not. But I will be dwelling on some very, very serious negatives. And one happens to be that we've now uncovered the method being used to form the National Police Force. And it's a recent development. It was secret, and it is still secret except for what I'm about to tell you today. And so I hope you will take the information I give you today, what I have, and I don't have a lot because it's a continuing investigation I'm doing at the present time. And the government is being very secretive, of course, about this information, but I have individuals that are working on developing this intelligence so that we can pass it on to you as we get it. And if you're not on our Aid and Abet mailing list, if you get a chance to pick up one of the Aid and Abet newsletters, police officer publication, I will keep you up to date on the National Police Force and how it's being formed. And as we dig into it and discover more of their developing of this plan through that vehicle. And so keep that in mind if that's an area that you're interested in, and I would say that if you're not interested, you better be, because I'm going to spend some time talking to you about some brother officers of mine around this nation, and believe me, you've got to be interested, because the plan is that police officers are going to become a greater part of your life every single month in the next few years. So it's going to be important that you keep your thumb on the heartbeat of what's going on in law enforcement, because I need your help in trying to turn this thing around that's going on in law enforcement across the country. But before I get into that, I want to take a moment to tell you this. I'd like to be an entertainer, and I'd like to entertain you today. I hope that you won't be bored with what I'm going to tell you, but I'm really not here to entertain you. I'm really not a public speaker, and maybe by now you can figure that out. Throughout school, English was a foreign language to this old Virginia boy, and I don't speak it very well. I don't write it very well, and if you picked up my newsletter to fellow officers, you'll probably figure out right away that I'm not a publisher and a writer either, but I just happen to be in a position where this type of a publication needed to be created to educate law enforcement across the country, and I couldn't get anybody else to do it. So I got stuck with it. Sometimes the Lord uses what's available, and I made myself available, and so we muddled through it. But today I've got some very important things to tell you, and it deals with the next couple years in our nation, just the next couple years. And one thing you should know is that, and I think most of you here are aware of it, someone today touched on it. I'm trying to think who it was that was speaking on this, but someone here said that in the United... Oh, I know what it was. It was on the Fully Informed Jury Amendment earlier this morning. The speaker touched on the fact that in every state, they're passing now around 750 to 1,000 new laws a year. Now, I had that figured much, much lower, at around 350 laws a year to 400 laws a year is what I believe the average was. Now, I'll have to check again because that was several years ago. But this is so important because my figures were at 350 and 400 new laws a year per state, that we were having about 17,000 new laws a year coming into existence, and over 250,000 new regulations and administrative laws, which are being treated by the courts as law, that are coming into existence every year. This tells me, and many other law enforcement officers that are complaining about this as much as you are, that we are going into a very highly controlled society very rapidly. And there are many police officers that don't like the looks of that either. Believe it or not, some of the officers realize that one day they're not going to carry the badge, and they're not going to be in that exclusive club, and they're going to have to retire back into the world they helped create. And it scares the heck out of them. And so I communicate with these officers, and we're trying to do something about it. We're trying to inform the enforcers in our society today, our fellow police officers, that they too should be concerned about this. Yeah, it's nice to have power, and it's nice every year we're given more power over our fellow citizens and all these things, but the fact is, for those intelligent police officers that can see exactly where we're going, because they know every single law is a restriction on somebody's rights. Now, in law enforcement, we like to think it's always on the right person's light, and that's the criminal out there, you know, that these laws are always restricting their rights. But that's not so, as we know it. So you have more people in allegiance with how you feel than what you believe. But I'll tell you about why you don't hear about it. And I'll tell you about why you don't hear from officers that support your beliefs and goals by giving you an example of an officer that supported your beliefs and your goals about 8 years ago. I was 32 years of age when I decided that I wanted to do something with my life that I felt was important. Now, I was in business for years and made some very good money, and the Lord blessed me with having just about everything I wanted. I was in business in California and had a chemical type business that we dealt in bulk chemicals, and I'd been successful at that. But I had this yearning to get into something where I felt like I was really contributing in a different way to individuals in the country. And so when I moved out to Arizona some 15 years ago to buy a cosmetic company, it was amazing. We moved our family out, and we moved to Arizona, Phoenix, Arizona, and we got here and found out that the business was a scam, and I was out of work because I had sold my company in California, moved to Arizona to buy this new company, and it turned out to be just a con job that was being pulled on us, so we didn't go into that business, and I found myself out of work. So I began to look around for the first time in my life and say, maybe this is the time that I can find something to do that really fulfills my desire to be a service to my fellow man. So I was downtown Phoenix one day. I looked up on a building, and there was a sign, and it said, police officer exam being given. Well, the only thing I knew about police work was a program on TV about two young police officers that would dash out every day into society, save the world, come in, and turn over the bad guys to the desk sergeant and say, book 'em, Dano, and they'd rush back out into the community and save some more people in the community and rush back in with the bad guys. And it looked marvelous. It looked exciting. It was called Adam 12. How many of you remember that show, Adam 12? And I thought that's what police work was all about. I really did. I was a big-time businessman. I didn't deal with police officers. I very seldom saw a police officer unless he was giving me a ticket for going too fast someplace. But I thought it was an exciting life. And indeed it is an exciting life, but it's a lot different than Adam 12. But anyway, when I saw that sign that day, I said, there's something that I can be of service to my fellow men in the community, and I can probably feel pretty good about myself and my contribution. But I had to consider the fact there wasn't much money in it. I wasn't into the graft and corruption type of thing, so I figured I'd probably have to live on what they paid me. And so it was a serious consideration, and I decided that day, after thinking a few minutes, that I would walk in the door and just ask some questions. Well, I walked in the door, and they handed me a book and a test and said, go sit down. So I wasn't doing anything. I was out of work. And so I went in, sat down, took the test, and handed it back to them and left. Well, the next week they called me on the phone and said, well, you did well on the test. We want to schedule you for another test. And so before I knew it, before I'd really thought about it a whole lot or asked any questions, I went through a series of about four or five tests, polygraph, physical agility, all these other things. Well, at that time, I was 32 years of age and kind of a chubby little businessman. I wasn't in the great condition I'm in today, see. I wasn't in great physical condition, but I was eager to learn about this new profession that I knew very little about, except what I saw like you on television and so forth. So I allowed myself to be scheduled for more and more tests, background investigation, all these things. Well, I didn't have to worry too much because I was in the military during the Vietnam era, had a top secret clearance in the military, and I breezed pretty well right through the background investigation and everything else. And lo and behold, all of a sudden they call me and says, you're scheduled to go to the police academy on March 22nd, 1976. And that's the first time I sat down and really thought about this thing. It had gone so quickly. And I thought about it and I said, well, I have nothing but time on my hands right now. I'm going to go for it. So I went into the academy, and at 32 years of age, I was called Granddad. I was called the old man, and I'll tell you why. Because everybody in that academy class was 20 and 21 years of age. I mean, a bunch of young whippers, and they knew nothing. Some of them were still living at home with their mommy and daddies. And here I looked around the room, and I'm thinking, in 15 weeks, they're going to give these guys guns, and they're going to be out controlling the other citizens in society? I would talk to some of these young people, intelligent, seemed rather bright, nice individuals, but they knew nothing about life. Nothing. You know, they didn't know anything about the psychodynamics of stress on families and all these things. They hadn't experienced anything. So I couldn't help but be concerned that when I went, for example, to a family fight, and I'm trying to separate a couple that are having family problems, and I call for a backup, and one of these young kids come in, and they're supposed to take either the father or mother off the side and discuss their family problems with them. How are they going to relate? You know, how can they empathize? How can they communicate on this level when you see a young kid come in that's still living at home with his parents, you know? So I'll tell you, my education started immediately in that academy. On the first day, we were asked to raise our right hand, and we were asked to swear an oath to the Constitution of the United States, basically the same oath I took in the military, to protect your rights and the laws of the country and your property and your persons. And it's the very first day I became a police officer, and so did they. But then the interesting thing was some very, very strange teachings began to come from the instructors. And remember now, at 32, I was hearing things a little differently than 20 and 21 year olds in that same class with me. And some of the things I heard was that it seemed in my mind that some of the things these young people were being told was limiting the ability for them to communicate with the public. I'll give you an example. We were told, I think it was the first or second day, and it was a motivational type thing to pump you up and get you excited about this new profession, and it's almost like an Amway meeting or something like that. You know, you rip, rip, rah, boy, you guys are great, this is it. And we were told things like this. We were told, you are no longer citizens. You are being put on a higher level than the citizens. You are now an entity of government, and you need to hold yourself to this level so you could better supervise the citizens for their own good. And I'm hearing these things. I'm going, wow, this is heavy stuff, you know. And I'm looking around the room, and these young kids are eating it up. Boy, hey, I'm somebody. Listen, ooh, I'm better than the other guys out there. I'm not a citizen. I'm a part of government now, and I'm... And weeks and weeks of this went on, this rah-rah building in these young people the feeling that they were better and they were different and they were separate from the citizens out there, and that they had to be separate and they had to be different and they had to be above them so that they could protect them for their own good in society. And so other things came across my ears, and I knew it sounded differently to me than others within the large crowd of young faces there. We were told, you are the thin blue line, and without you, meaning the police officers, without you, society would totally destroy itself. And I'm thinking, wow, you know, I didn't realize that I'm 32 and that I would have totally destroyed myself if police officers hadn't been around. I hadn't seen any of them. So I really didn't understand that I would have self-destructed, you know, gone into some type of self-destruct mode if there hadn't been police officers around in my life somewhere. And so it went on. Over the weeks, these young people, their minds were developed. And one thing I have to say, if you want to train people to do exactly what you tell them to do, you need to take young people that have no life experience, and I'm telling you, they'll learn. They suck up information like this old 32-year-old couldn't do. I mean, I had some problems with a lot of this stuff, but they had no problems with it. We were told one day that one day you will be asked to do things that you won't want to do. You won't feel good about doing, but if you don't do it, no one else is going to do it in society. And we always wondered, what was that thing we were going to be asked to do one day, you know? And we were told that society depended on us, the salvation and the safety of society depended on us doing things when we're told to do it and not ask questions, you know, just do what you're told. And that we were this last vanguard to protect our nation. And of course, this sounds good to 20 and 21-year-olds. Because they're nobody at that point. I wasn't anybody at that point. I was in the military, and I was kicking around. I didn't know anything from anything. I was just out of high school a couple of years before. And so we make these people something. I mean, we raise them. We really do raise them to a level beyond anything they could reach if they just went out, say, into the business world at that age or went to college at that age. Psychologically, they come out of that 15, 16 weeks or whatever it is here in this area, different people. And they're the people that march up to your car and act with that air of authority and that aristocratic almost attitude, that superiority complex that they now have. And they're being told that this is healthy because if it wasn't for them, you would just destroy yourselves and everybody around you. So it was a very interesting few weeks that we spent in the academy. A few other things that troubled me very much is as I saw a wedge being driven between the citizens and the police officers, and I couldn't understand why are they driving this wedge deeper and why are they driving us apart psychologically to where these young officers cannot communicate on the same level with the fellow citizens out there. What is this all about? And we were told that you can't trust the citizens out there to help you if you ever need help. Only a fellow officer can help you. And it went on and on and on. They instructed us that we should try to socialize with fellow officers and not with the citizens because they don't understand you. They don't understand your stresses. They don't understand, you know, and when they need you, they like you, but after they don't need you anymore, they don't like you anymore. And I found out that's pretty well true, you know. When you think about it, when do you want a cop around? When you need them. You don't want one around when you don't need them, you know. And so I guess there was some truth in some of the things they were saying, but I think the reason, now that I've been through the system so many years, the reason you don't like police officers around is because of their attitude. You see, they might be pretty nice people to be around if they were on your same level and they were citizens like you and you could empathize with them and everything, but it's hard today because of their training has purposely been set up to separate you and to keep it them or us. And you might say, well, why? Why would they want that? Well, I think I'm talking to a group today that probably I don't have to tell you why they want that. But the day is coming when that little thing in the back of my mind that I remember 15 years ago, or less than that, about 14 years ago. Yeah, I guess it's been almost 15 years. When we were told, you're going to be asked to do something one day that you're not going to want to do, but you're going to have to do to save society. And if in other countries we see law enforcement officers becoming a part of the enforcement of dictates on the populace, that if they were closely knit and akin with the citizenry, they couldn't do that. Some of the things law enforcement in other countries have been able to do to their fellow countrymen, we can't hardly believe that those things could be done to your fellow countrymen by government agents. Why don't they empathize with them? Why don't they feel a camaraderie between neighbors? I mean, because these police officers live in your neighborhood. Well, they don't have that camaraderie because they, too, in those other countries, have been separated from the citizens, and they've been told probably the same things we're being told today, that we are here to supervise you for your own good. The day that we are the protectors of society, and you notice the word peace officer is gone. Today it's enforcement officer. That peace officer thing, the word isn't used too much today either, and it's probably valid because we're not here so much as to protect you as we are to supervise you and to be a control factor in society. So I went through the academy, and in 15 weeks I had been through all the law that an attorney goes through, along with these young fertile minds. We had been through in 15 weeks all the state laws, the local laws, many regulations and things like that, city ordinances, that lawyers go through in 4 years. We went through in 15 weeks. It's an unbelievable stress course and an incredible, fast-moving program. And, of course, we didn't learn case law and all the things that they spend 4 years on in law school, because you really can go through all the laws in a couple months, you know. But if you've got to learn all the court decisions and all the twisting and turning of the law that's been done over 100 years in our nation, then, of course, it takes 4 years to indoctrinate you to that. We didn't have to go through that because we don't take court cases to trial. All we had to do is know what was right or wrong, what the laws were and so forth. So we learned that. We learned laws of arrest, of course, all the self-protection things, and learned how to use a weapon and so forth. But it was a constant barrage of stroking and motivating these young people to take a position in society as your overseers. And I resented it. I went through it. I was a member of society. I thought I had made it on my own all those years I was in business. I didn't see any officers around to stop me from self-destructing. You know, so I kind of resented this idea that if we weren't there, that things would just disappear overnight as far as society goes. Well, after these weeks, I hit the street in South Phoenix, which is the high crime area of Arizona. I was fortunate. I didn't think so at first. I was a little nervous about going out into the most highly crime-ridden areas of the city of Phoenix. But I found out that that was the best place to be. Because if you want to learn police work, there's nothing like jumping right in. To where within the first 2 weeks, I had handled almost every kind of a call that there was to handle. I mean, you know, rapes, child kidnappings, prostitution, dope, murder, everything under the sun. And I worked a strip called Van Buren, which was the heart of the prostitution area and at that time the dope area. And it was very, very active. And so I really, after a few months, appreciated the fact that my indoctrination into the world of law enforcement was so much farther advanced than some of my class members that had gone up into the more affluent neighborhoods, where it took them a year before they had some of the calls that I had within the first few weeks. It was more dangerous, but that helped me too in learning how to protect myself and how to deal with people, how to extinguish the flashpoints on some of the calls I went on quickly as possible. In other words, when you go into a situation where a man's just beat his wife and stabbed her a few times, and you go in and he's still holding the knife, and he's almost suicidal. You don't know what he's going to do. He doesn't know what he's going to do. You need to be able to keep control mentally. And this is a very important thing that you have to understand with police officers in your area, too. Police officers are taught to keep control mentally. And if they lose mental control, they have to go to physical immediately, or they could be killed. And in many, many cases with the criminal element out there, that is indeed the case. If you lose mental control, you have to go to physical. Now, we look at a traffic stop, and I hear from patriots across the country all the time, and some few years back they used to mail me all their pictures of their black eyes and knocked out teeth and broken fingers and everything after a traffic stop. And they wouldn't understand what happened. They'd say, well, I jumped out of the car, I told them I didn't need a license, I didn't need this and didn't need that, and I belligerently confronted the officer with my rights. You know, I told him what my rights were, and I stood firm on it. And the next thing I knew, you know, I told him about the law and the things I'd learned. Next thing I knew, there was three or four backup officers there. They had me on the ground wrestling me and took me off to jail. What happened? They would ask me. Well, remember that 20 and 21-year-old brain. They are taught you don't lose mental control. And if you lose mental control, you go immediately to physical. And some of you people out here are guilty of causing officers within the first few seconds to lose mental control because you plink out their computer. You whip things on them in the law that they just go bong, you know, and now they're out of... They don't know what you're talking about, you know, and it sounds like you're right. That's the scary thing to them, you know, yeah. And now what are they taught? Get physical. You know, they've got to keep control of the situation. So when you're confronting an officer on the street especially, you've got a potentially dangerous situation if you plink out their computer. So it's important that patriots, if they want to share information with police officers, watch it carefully. Because if you start seeing that officer get highly agitated and you look like he's about ready to plink over to the physical, it's time to take it to court. Because I don't think it's necessary for us to sustain the injuries we sustain just trying to assert our rights and trying to inform and educate police officers out there. So it's... A lot of that now has stopped, thank goodness, because we're becoming smarter. The public's becoming smarter after being bruised and beaten quite a bit. And now we find that on traffic stops, people, citizens are beginning to learn to smile and say to the officer, even though you don't mean it, you say, gee, I appreciate what you're doing out here, officer. You work hard. I know it's a tough job, but let me tell you about the way I feel about this situation we find ourselves in here. You say I stopped. Or didn't stop for the light, or, you know, whatever it is. And you learn to smile and treat him with respect. And all of a sudden, you're beginning to educate a little bit without the backup units coming, you know, and without the fights and being hauled off to jail. Now, that's not always the case because at this time, things have shifted. And today, the minute you mention a constitutional issue, some of the officers panic just from that because they're told that the constitutionalist, the patriot, and the freemen and whatever else name we may go by in their names can be potentially dangerous types of stops. And so a lot of times they will get panicky right away because of the training they're receiving now that you guys are a dangerous lot out there. So it's a touchy situation, but let me get back to that that officer that tested the system to try to change things with that in the police department. Well, after 3 years on the department, I had applied myself. I kept my mouth shut, and I decided that I wanted to be a police officer. I wanted to be a police officer and for several reasons. I felt real good about what I was doing. I had received a lot of traffic tickets when I was young, so I never liked to write tickets. I didn't write a lot of tickets, but I concentrated on other things I thought were more important. And within the first 3 years, I, out of 1,500 police officers in the city of Phoenix, I had won the Officer of the Year award twice out of all these officers. So I was feeling good about myself. I was applying myself, learning my new profession. I loved it because every once in a while, once a week anyway, I was there in time to make a difference in somebody's life. Something very important. Maybe it's a child drowning or something, but I've never in my life had such a fulfillment of being involved in something important, you know, and being able to make a difference in people's lives. And so although I had dropped two-thirds of my more than that, about, I'd say about two-thirds of my income that I would normally make, I was down considerably and lived near the poverty level as a new police officer out on the street, which was new to me. But the gratification I was getting out of my job at being an important part of society and actually helping people, especially in the areas I worked, in the minority areas, high crime areas where people are desperate and frustrated and don't know how to escape that type of a life. And so for those of us that work in those type of areas of the city, it can be very fulfilling. And so within the first 3 years, I had won numerous accommodations from the citizens and numerous accommodations from my employment. From the police department and had won the highest awards in the city. And I attribute this not to me being anything special. Believe me, I'm not anything special. What was the difference in my life was that I had the Lord with me. I was a Christian. I was baptized in the Caribbean some years back before this, and I prayed a lot, and I asked the Lord to lead me every day and protect me every day and let me be a help to somebody today. And the fact, a very important thing was, I was 32 when I started. I knew how to communicate with people. I knew that even if you have a child molester, and you're taking a two-year-old child to the medical center to be sewn up, and you want to kill somebody so bad, and you get a hold of the bad guy, and you want to just do unbelievable things to this creep that would do something like that, you have to learn to communicate with that individual, and of all things, give them a certain amount of respect so that you don't get injured and maybe get killed, and you can arrest that individual and put him in jail without an altercation. That's not easy to do, but I can tell you one thing, a 20 and 21-year-old individual can't do that. They haven't matured to that point where they can do these things. That's why your young officers are getting killed more, and they have a rough time. I would go to family fights, and I would get the two couples separated, and we'd get to talking, and my backup would get there, and I see it was a young guy or young girl. They'd come in, and all of a sudden a fight would break out. Because they'd come in, you get over there. I told you to shut up. Oh my goodness. And all of a sudden we're all in this big battle, you know. And I'm getting my uniform ripped off of me. And you know, it's crazy. And I think there's only one good reason to hire that young a person to try to deal with the most horrible problems in people's lives. And that is that they accept training very easily at that young age. And that's not good with some of the training they're receiving. Okay, so I just spent the first 3 years there, and I was told that I had become the most highly decorated officer in the city of Phoenix after 3 years. I was tickled to death, but I'm telling you these things not in boasting. I'm telling you this because I want to tell you what happened next. I want to tell you that I wasn't a flake, as some officers are, and there's some officers that should not be police officers. And you've met some of them, some of you here. You know they shouldn't be police officers because they're a detriment not only to other officers' reputations, but to you and society as a whole. But I'm trying to build my credibility in your eyes because I'm going to tell you something that happened to me next. And I think it will, by you realizing that I wasn't a borderline officer, that I was destined to move up in the ranks, and some of my supervisors told me that they believed if I worked hard that one day I might be able to be chief of police. And that makes a guy feel real good. I worked hard. During that 3 years' time, I developed some crime prevention programs that were taken not only throughout the city of Phoenix. One was called the Officer Friendly Program, and which was officers would go into the schools and talk to the young children about crime and how to play safe and how to deal with stranger danger, you know, and all these things. Well, I developed a program called the Officer Friendly Program, and the Sears Roebuck Foundation heard about it and came in and filmed me and used that film, and they picked up the tab to start that program throughout the United States, and it's still in effect today in many departments all over the country. And so my life was beautiful. My life was going well, and I was thrilled to be a part of such important work, you know, and so a lot of other neat things happened, and I couldn't do wrong. I mean, my chief loved me. He was getting such good publicity locally. The schools all loved me, and of course they loved him too, and all the great programs that I was developing, and he was getting the benefits of that. Then the national things happened and so forth. So I was probably the most well-known officer in the whole state of Arizona within those first 3 years. Now, I've told you this, like I say, to follow up with what I'm about to tell you. In those 3 years, I had accepted a lot of education on how to learn and how to do my job, and I was applying it, and it worked. It was good. I knew how to relate with people, and I was well known. And so one day, a city not far away from us called Sun City, that's not Sin City, that's Sun City, and it's a retirement center, one of the best in the nation. Some of you might have heard of Sun City, and some of my relatives live there now. But back then, they had a problem with crime because of the fact that it was all elderly, and the creeps from South Phoenix and all would go into that area to attack the elderly and to rob them and do everything under the sun to them, because they knew that they were more susceptible to this type of criminal perpetration on them. So they were very heavily victimized. So they called me up and said, "Jack, would you come out and talk to us about crime prevention and what we can do to secure our homes and our property, and that we can walk our streets safe and so forth?" And so I said, "Sure, I'll come out." So I went out that night, and I went in police uniform. And now I'm going to... I'm a little warm up here. It may be the light. Do you mind if I take it easy here? I take this down because I want to get into this thing a little more. You know, I want to really get into what I'm doing. And I didn't ask if there's any police officers here, because usually they don't raise their hands anyway. Many times they're undercover, and so I won't ask you to raise your hands. But I want to tell you, I'm very pleased that you're here, if there are some brother police officers here or sister police officers. And if there's some undercover officers here, I know there's one here, and so I'm going to ask if this officer shows himself, and maybe to help us get into the spirit a little bit. So I'm going to see if I can do this here without disturbing this microphone. I decided that I was told I couldn't wear this uniform anymore, and I'm going to get into that right now. I was not only the most highly decorated police officer in the city of Arizona, or city of Phoenix, rather, but I became the most fired police officer in the city of Phoenix, and it's your fault. And I'm going to tell you about why it's you guys' fault that my career potential took a nosedive when I began to get educated about what was going on in America. So I decided I was going to start wearing my uniform again. This is nostalgia for me. I'm retired, of course, and my badge here says retired on it. But I think that I'm very proud of this uniform, because there's a lot of good things in our society that police officers do. And I want to tell you about one.